dissolved the council permanently. The last remnants of the old republic have been swept away.
One, two, three. That'll do. Oh, well, that was fine.
Yep.
Okay, you guys ready?
Yep.
Yeah.
Awesome. Hey, you SJW cucks, this is the Imperial Senate Podcast. I'm your host, Charlie Ashby, and joining me today are my wonderful co-hosts, Nikki Kumar and Claire Stripling.
Hey, Claire? What is that?
Your name's not Claire, is it? Claire Stripling. How are you guys? And Claire, who I've just made up, apparently.
I mean, you could call me worse things than Care, so I'm good. Doing all right.
Oh, yeah, because apparently caring is a bad thing now on the internet.
That's news to me, I guess.
It's for SJWs, as you say.
I know, right? It's been a tough time for us. Out there, caring about stuff, being nice.
God, we suck.
How have you guys been? It's been a fun sort of week for fandom, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, I have to confess, I've been out of it. I am enjoying the World Cup too much, and it's been a nice distraction from all the things swirling around Star Warsville, I gotta say.
It's actually...
Yeah, we have like a different...
Oh, no, it's just actually, it's been okay break. For me. I've just been kind of basking in the celebration, you know, anticipation. There's been a lot of people that are like, man, I can't wait to see you guys at Celebration. I'm like, I love you all, I guess. So I've been doing okay.
Well, that's good then. That's like a sort of a nice sort of a different edge to what we see on Twitter, where it's been a bit miserable recently. But, you know, Nikki, you got another group of people to moan at. different fans around the world. I know I've been watching the World Cup as well, getting excited about England.
They ain't doing as dirty.
Which is it's weird though, isn't it? Feeling excited for once.
It's all new experience.
I mean,
my family, we're Germany people, so I've been a little bit up and down, as you can see. So
we swapped places.
We're
in the upside down. It's the upside down World Cup.
Yeah, I don't know what's going on.
Well, at least you'd have to root for Scotland.
Oh no! I don't even pretend that Scotland's national team is a thing. Yes, I lived in Scotland. No, I will not cheer for Scotland, except for the Glasgow Rangers, where my heart will always, always be. Follow, follow.
There you go. Stevie G.
Yes.
Well, it's not just us today, obviously, on the podcast. We've got a special guest, and he's the head of MakingStyles.com, co-host of Now This Is Podcasting. It's the king of soy himself, Jason Ward. How's it going, mate?
Hey, guys. How's it going? Thanks for having me.
Yeah, thank you for coming.
It's great to have you on.
What up, soy boy?
No, it's crazy. It's crazy out there in that world. And I should apparently start watching football/soccer so I can get away from it for a little while, I think, huh?
It's been exciting, even if you don't care about anybody.
Yeah, you just see a bunch of people get excited, get really angry. So it's kind of like Star Wars. But
every now and then there's some racial slurs. Level.
Okay.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, this is sounding just like Star Wars on the internet on YouTube and Twitter.
Yeah. But, you know,
but no one wins.
Exactly. It's almost like Star Wars is a microcosm of our real world.
Wow. Yeah. I think I buy into that idea actually, unfortunately.
Isn't
it's
that
gotta
sad?
It's got to be coincidence. I don't think there's anything really in that. But we'll see.
Oh my god. Maybe. So yeah, talking about like stuff that's happened this week on Twitter and just like fandom in general. I mean, a few days ago, Collider.com posted that exclusive article that detailed how Lucasfilm are looking to move away from the standalone films for the time being and focus more on Episode 9. Nikki and Claire, what did you think when you first saw this news sort of burst on the internet?
Well, I kind of had a moment of panic. I love the standalones. I adore Rogue One. That's my favorite of the new Disney movies. So just thinking about not having the potential for that kind of storytelling again just got me kind of bummed. But then I thought about it and thought about how stressed I was every time a new series of movies or TV show or Rian Johnson's trilogy came out, and I was just like, oh God, I have to think about all these new things now. What am I going to do? I just stress over basically nothing that's not going to come for several years. But I'm doing okay. That was basically what it is. Like, this is, it's better for them to not juggle too many things if that means that they're going to give us better storytelling. So, you know, up and down. That's kind of what I thought when I heard the news initially.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, like for me, I adore Solo so much. And I was at first just sort of like bummed out because I thought it'll be like the forever narrative now that Solo tanked the standalones.
No.
But yeah, I mean, I'm also like, I'm going to have just like a boring take because I am a happy member of Shillville, and I trust Lucasfilm. It's like, if they think the best course of action is to focus on these other projects first, then it's like, okay, I guess you guys know. So yeah, that's my boring take, but yeah, I think, I wish there was just a little more. I feel like the negativity that is going to pile on Solo with this, news was the first thing that sort of like, I was like, oh, come on.
Yeah, I get you. I mean, Shillville is my favorite LucasArts game, by the way. Just a terrific piece of gaming. Yeah, I guess at first I was like, you know, I was kind of bummed by the news because I really like these standalone films separate to the saga films. Like, I think both make each other feel more special. Like, it's an event for either one. Of course, ABC News later on that week published a piece that said Lucasfilm actually far from being done with these films, and we're working on some that are in development right now but not officially announced. Jason, what is actually happening?
Well, like up front really quickly, like Clayton Sendell's piece from ABC, I saw some people like in the film community, if you will, sort of like eye rolling it because it was ABC, and but I gotta say, right, Clayton is as real of a Star Wars fan as any of these film site guys.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? And girls, yeah. I don't mean it. I didn't mean that gender specific, but you know, they are completely like Clayton's like into it. And the way that he covers it is pretty authentic, especially considering his position, because that ABC platform really could be that. And I do to a degree think that it, ABC getting that like scoop and going with it was essentially because Lucasfilm circumventing their policy of not commenting on rumors. And so I think that it, on one hand, yeah, that is why ABC had the scoop probably. But at the same time, the way that Clayton like reported it was completely authentic. So I thought that was sort of lame on their part, because if they knew who he was or what he's about, it's completely not as they were depicting it.
Mm-hmm.
That said, I went and started digging, and honestly, I would rather, I usually like to spend a little bit more time, but this week my wife had a surgery. So I kind of was like drawn between taking care of her, and then when she would crash out, I would go work, you know? And so I was able to like get into it. And what I learned was that it sounded like there was a third spinoff Star Wars film that we didn't know about that wasn't rumored, and that there was studio space allocated to it. That studio space, that film was canceled at some point. And when it was canceled, that studio space was then relinquished back to Pinewood. When that happened, that was when people started to notice that, wow, a lot of studio space just freed up. What was canceled? It was a Star Wars film. And then from there, I personally had rumors that the Boba movie was canceled or the Obi-Wan movie was canceled. And so I was like, But it was so inconclusive when it was first happening that like it wasn't something I would have moved on personally. And that's not like a slight at Collider. I don't mean it that way. I just mean from my perspective, from my angle. It was like, okay, but like you don't really know which movie it was for certain. And at that time, the answer was no. So then when the Collider story broke, it was like, okay. And then as I dug into it deeper, it looked like that was maybe the genesis of the rumor starting in the first place. But I don't know Collider's, like, I don't know who their source is. I'm not pretending, you know, to know any of that. So I'm assuming that we're hearing the same rumor, and I could be wrong on that front. But what ended up, but one of the things that did end up coming out from all of this, though, later on, was that it sounds like that there was art being done. There was a small art team for Kenobi that was doing work at Pinewood, and they were let go, or they, you know, it was dismissed or whatever, disbanded. So with that in mind, it does sound kind of bad for Kenobi, or it did sound bad. But at the same time, like, as far as it goes from our angle, there is, from my perspective so far, I've seen nothing to say that Kenobi isn't happening. I've only heard that a third movie isn't happening now, and that third movie may have been a movie that centered around Mos Eisley. And yeah, and it was like, so I don't know if it was like Mos Eisley a Star Wars story, you know, or Mos Eisley spaceport a Star Wars story, or if it was simply like part of the movie took place there. And when I say that, even though in my article I tried to be really clear about this, I still have people tweeting me today going, are you sure that Obi-Wan Kenobi didn't just go there? Are you sure Boba Fett didn't? And I'm like, no, because it was a third production with a different code name. And now sometimes these movies have multiple code names, and I usually think I know them. And this one for the Mos Eisley film does not line up with any of the multiple code names for Boba or Obi-Wan. And I also want to say that I'm not releasing the Mos Eisley code name or the other ones for Kenobi and Boba, because I don't think that information really amounts to very much. And I think if in the end it just hurts like the fan sites and podcasters from being able to validate actual real information that comes in and real rumors.
Yeah.
So like when somebody says like I have a script page, and then they have like a fake script page from Obi-Wan, and like it says Joshua Tree on it, because that's out. And so on one hand, I did report those code names earlier on because I was stupid. And now that I've kind of like seen what happens when I do that, I'm like, no, I'm not going to do that anymore personally. And that isn't like a slight to Fantatrex who released some and stuff like that. I don't mean it that way at all. I mean, you never know. Sometimes there could be a clue to the plot in the code name. Sometimes there is, but like Avco, we got nothing from Avco,
right.
Like from, you know, that being out. So that, yeah, that was kind of the week. And from my perspective how it all went down.
So we lost Star Wars cheers.
Yeah, I want to say, like, you know, when I wrote that, like, there were like knee jerk reactions that were like, oh my god, and good, and like the thing that I always say is, if you've seen HBO's Deadwood, you can see exactly how much promise there is in a concept like that if they were to go and make it.
Right.
And initially, yeah. Star Wars Underworld was inspired by the cable shows Deadwood and Rome. So it's completely possible that some of the Star Wars Underworld, not the good website, but the television show, was inspired by or this Mos Eisley premise might have taken from Underworld, the TV show. So I'm trying to get out.
And there's so many like characters and background stories that, I mean, like look at the old EU, like how many stories like Tales from Jabba's Palace and the Mos Eisley Cantina. There's so many cool little characters and background stories.
Or like
tell.
A solid right. half of From a Certain Point of View, which was all in the cantina.
Yeah.
Well, like even when like you think about movies like Goodfellas, like how much power did the mob in Goodfellas actually have? They really had a small chunk of territory. And so, you know, look at how good that film was. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And just imagine that you can do that with that kind of location in Star Wars. It's completely possible. And then also imagine if you had that whole story, and then at the very end of it, when, you know, everything is going a certain way, this old wizard and a kid with two droids come through and bring the Empire down on it and bring it all crashing to the ground, you know? And then what that would do. I just think there was like a lot of potential if that rumor was accurate.
Right.
If that perspective was like true. And like there is always, I had somebody from who I respect from another film blog tell me, honestly, I think Mos Eisley was a cover for like Kenobi or something like that. And there is always a chance that that's true too. Like I on this one, I'm not claiming to be like the end all be all. Like I don't have any empirical evidence. Sometimes I get empirical evidence, and when I do, that's when I go hard. You know, that's when I'm like, for sure, I promise you. But on this one right here, this is like word of mouth, and it's word of mouth from people who were going to make a movie and didn't make that movie. So it's like, how much do they know? How much is their assumption? How much are they, you know, I can't say.
Yeah, and let's just assume that that third film was definitely Mos Eisley. I still think it's kind of interesting that even though they're sort of going away from the main characters of the, like the key franchise, it's not like a Boba Fett film or a Kenobi film. It's still pretty much grounded in that original trilogy and like the key concepts. So do you think that the standalone films are still leaning towards like not cherry picking, but sort of, you know, leaning on concepts from those original three films?
It does kind of seem like that is the case. I mean, it to me, it feels like if you want to be able to pull from the prequel era content and you want to be able to sort of make like an original trilogy-esque film, doing what yeah. Solo did, where you kind of have one foot in the prequel era, one foot in the original trilogy era, and the, quote, dark times era, which is really like, it does feel kind of explored, but it is really pretty unexplored, you know, in the big scope of Star Wars. Like when you look at like Clone Wars has like 100 episodes, and we do have a little bit of Star Wars Rebels on that, but it's more from like one family's perspective mostly.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah. And so I do think that it like that time is like kind of left wide open, and that's why we're getting like that video game, you know, from I think Respawn, that's set in right after the prequels and going into that era. And so I would imagine that it like, yeah, but the original trilogy kind of being like the like wellspring seems to be the way it's going to go. But these like the Rian Johnson trilogy and the Game of Thrones people's trilogy, like that might be completely separate from everything. So that might be where it strays, and the spinoff films might be what kind of puts us back to the you know, what made us love Star Wars for sure, to like kind of keep it grounded maybe.
Yeah, because like The Last Jedi, no matter how many people want to remake it, you know, or angry with it, it made a lot of money, it got a good critical response. So I guess like, did Lucasfilm go forward and push even more into that unknown territory with these new films?
Perhaps the unknown regions, they... because give them to me, the baby Thrawn, please, please.
Well, and these little space whales. But are they keeping the standalones to be like something that the older fans might enjoy in terms of the original trilogy? And what you said with the prequel trilogy as well with Solo, you actually see that in Rogue One as well, I think.
Yeah.
There's a lot of prequel sort of elements.
Turbo
there.
Tank.
So I think it's kind of...
yeah. Saw, yeah.
Bell. Yeah, so I'm just interested, like, the fact that these standalone films might be put on the back burner slightly, are they sort of reassessing what they should be doing of those potential films? Are they going to push more to unknown territory, or they're going to sort of double down on the elements that we know and love for those particular films?
Yeah, my hope is that they aren't like being afraid, because Solo, in my opinion, it came down to the marketing. And yeah. And like I've said it on my show a few times, like when I ran scoops from Solo, it was during like the fervor for The Last Jedi. And if I got a scoop, like I did like one scoop where I released like a Voss, you know, and then I released all of the names and the planets and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. On that story, I got like 25% of the attention on that one than I did on just your basic bare bones Last Jedi story. And that has nothing to... So to me, when people say that like Last Jedi was the reason that Solo didn't do well, I'm like, dude, like Solo wasn't doing well for me before Last Jedi even came out. And so I kind of think that it was a lot of it was like marketing. I don't think that they ever convinced the general public that they wanted a Han Solo movie and that somebody else was going to actually be convincing in the part. And if anything, I would think that it, unfortunately, perhaps the takeaway is that original concepts aren't as hard to sell. Like Rogue One, while there is that Death Star connection, they immediately were selling Jyn Erso. And you're like, oh, okay, so I'm going to go on an adventure with Jyn Erso and how she does, you know, her quest. And everyone was like, oh, who is that? And they wanted to like, know. And then, but with the Solo film, people were like, yeah, it's Han and Chewbacca and the Falcon. And they flip switches and they react to asteroids. Like that was sort of like the attitude, like right off the bat. And they just never got around it. So I hope that they realized that it was marketing. Like in my opinion, I think I'm right on that one. Mm-hmm. I think it came down to the marketing being the thing that it pushed everything away. And to me, it seems like a story like I mean, if the Mos Eisley story is true, is accurate, we don't know if there were any classic characters in that story either. Like I don't have any clue who was in it. But that said, it's like that seems more like a Rogue One concept where you could sell a new character, you know, and make people interested in it, as opposed to people kind of being stubborn and afraid that you're going to ruin their childhood imaginary best friend.
And when it comes to like, it seems the casual fan, like my family they're not big Star Wars fans. It's just me. I'm all alone. But
I'm with you on that.
Right. But like... It just seems that every casual fan I've talked to going into the movie, they'd be like, it's just, he's not Harrison Ford. He's not Billy Dee Williams. And that mentality, it seems like everybody who isn't like us picking apart and going, maybe he's going to feel like Han Solo. I feel like the hardcore fans and the podcast community and the people who are sitting here like agonizing over every tiny detail we get in a trailer, it seems like for once we were more open to accepting his performance than the casual fan seemed to be, instead of just sitting there going, he's not Harrison Ford. He's not Billy Dee. He's not right. Han Solo, because that's Han Solo. Harrison is. And I agree with you. I definitely think that it's easy to sell an idea without having to recreate such a specific character. You know, I think that going more of a Rogue One route, if we're going to do more standalones, please. I think that would be the safest route. Like, have a concept, don't circle it around young Luke Skywalker on Tatooine. Like, that is so dangerous. And anyway, I just think that that also probably had the movie suffer a little bit. Definitely, they didn't market it because we got a Last Jedi trailer in April. And had months and months and months and months to think about it. When did the first Solo trailer drop? It was
Super Bowl, right? Like February? Yeah.
It just was so, so close that it just felt so close to it that I don't know.
I love the paradox of you would expect the most entrenched fans to be the ones that are like hardest to convince about a new actor, right? But yeah, in my experience, it was the same. Just sort of people on the street being like, oh, I'm not so sure about this guy. Whereas, yeah, I was like, oh, man, all in. And I thought the marketing point is funny because, like, my mom is not at all, you know, connected to what fandom discusses. And she was saying how, like, you can't watch 10 minutes of TV without seeing a Fallen Kingdom commercial. She's like, where was that for Solo? And because again, like, she didn't really know much about it. We went and saw it and she really enjoyed it. So yeah, I'm with you, Jason. I think marketing was probably one of the biggest things.
Do you guys think that it would be wiser to reintroduce these characters in like other spinoff films? Like, I mean, I wouldn't want this in Rogue One, but for instance, had Rogue One introduced Lando in a moment or in a few sequences as like sort of like a small character and have them emerge from there. Do you think that reintroduction would maybe soften people having to jump so hard into like a full like Solo concept? Because I've thought about this, and like, you know, if you kind of saw Han in some other things first, that I think people would like it. They would see.
Were there rumors about that for like a hot second? Like Han Solo would show up at the end of Rogue One? Because that seems like a very familiar idea. Yeah. Right.
Yeah, but it was completely false. Yeah, it was completely... I mean, obviously, he didn't end up in the movie, but I remember it's where it originated from, and it was kind of silly. Yeah.
I think that that's a really good idea, introducing them somewhere else in the small, small snippets before you put them in their own movie and have them behind the wheel. But part of the thing that that makes me nervous about that is it's got to be short, but it has to be perfect. And you have to feel it in such a short amount of time, which is kind of a huge task. And then on top of that, it can't feel gimmicky. Like, you can't have Lando walking and go, "Oh, hello, what have we here?" You know, like, it's got
completely agree.
That's such like a tall order to fill. But I think that that's really a good way to do it if you are going to try and bring back another actor filling that kind of role.
I think Rogue One has a great case of both of those alternatives.
Yes.
Like the Dr. Everson bit is like, come on. But the C-3PO and R2 bit were Scarif. Like, that's perfect for me. I love that bit. Because it makes sense that they're there. It doesn't impact on the story. And, like, it just makes sense. Like Claire said, I don't want Lando just to walk in and be like, "Hello, what are we here? And how are you?" And then, "See ya." Like, it'd be like...
Yeah.
I think, as well, because we're so used to the Marvel era, and it has been 10 years, like, you see, if any film now, any film franchise, people say, "Oh, is there an end credit scene?" Like, it could be like a film about a real life event, and they go, "Is there an end credit scene?
Did he come back?" I have a friend who does that at every movie, too.
I'd be concerned if people will think that these cameo appearances will lead into something. I mean, in this case, like you said, Jason, it would be leading into a Han Solo film. But I guess there's also the risk that they'll go, "Oh my god, that means Jyn Erso and Han Solo are going to be together in the next film." I mean, like, we still got people confused about, like, the general audiences were confused about when Rogue One was set. And it had it was okay marketing. It wasn't as bad as Solo. But, you know, I think you got to be careful with these sort of things. So I'm not sure how I would feel with... I think it depends on the character. Like, if IG-88 is just hanging out in the background, I'm like, okay, cool, makes sense.
A boy.
Yeah.
But, your boy.
I love IG-88. I wore my IG-88 t-shirt yesterday. I love him.
I can't even believe there's an IG-88 t-shirt. Be honest.
Didn't we fan cast him last time?
Is the Death Star 2 on it?
I'd take that movie.
Yes.
Oh, that's funny.
That's the perfect spin-off. You get IG-88, Jeff Goldblum. That's all you need to know. That's the marketing there.
Yeah.
That's all you need.
And yeah, he connects to the Death Star 2, obviously. Because that's canon, in my mind. Hashtag remake, Return of the Jedi.
And then it's actually a tragedy because in the end he achieves his goal of becoming the Death Star 2, to be blown up.
Guys, I'm not feeling this anymore. there we go.
Oh my god.
You can have E. McDermott to make a cameo as he's falling down the Death Star chute.
Wow.
That'd be perfect. As long as we don't hit into the Dr. Everson category, I think we should be fine. Because it doesn't really bother me too much, but it's one of those bits in the cinema where you're kind of like, like, some people laugh, but I'm like, was it necessary? Probably not. I'm interested in where the standalone films would go and if they keep doing that. I'm sure everyone wants a Kenobi film, but I'm not entirely certain if the mainstream audiences want that. There was a good... I can't remember who put it on Twitter, but someone asked people to ask their own families how they felt about a Kenobi film. And a lot of people actually weren't interested, which actually surprised me, considering that every time Ewan McGregor grows a beard, it's confirmation that he's coming back. Jason, what were your thoughts on the like a potential Kenobi film? Do you think more people will be interested in that than a Han Solo film? Or does it hit the same sort of like boundaries as Han Solo, where you have to have a good, decent marketing ploy and story in place?
I mean, in terms of the United States, I would say that a Kenobi film should have been the more lucrative film. I mean, you're doing, you know, the American Western almost. You know what I mean? Yeah. It's like, why doesn't that connect? Like, I think that should have been the easier thing. But when you get down to the Kenobi film and fans, I mean, every day I have somebody, and I get it, but every day I have somebody who says, like, I could just watch Kenobi on Tatooine looking at the desert for 2 hours. And I'm like, I feel you, but that's not really like kind of a movie people would want. And I kind of think that if they were to do like that kind of film, a wise way to do it might be to like tell his life story in a sense. But I don't know how you would do that in it without, like, you know, going over the Phantom Menace to an extent and stuff. So it kind of gets like kind of complicated in that way. But it would be, but it would just be like interesting to see Kenobi's like overall life, then with like an overall story. You know what I mean? To that culminates in something like where he would fight Maul or whatever, but just to have like Kenobi, you know, on Tatooine in an inconsequential kind of adventure, I'm not sure if you could really convince general people that they want that movie. That sounds hard to me. I mean, I think it's going to have to be, if they make it, I think it's going to have to be a really special movie that goes well beyond what our knee-jerk expectations are. I think they're going to have to really delve into that fantasy stuff, and they're going to have to bring back Liam Neeson.
All of the Force lore. Give me the Force lore.
Yeah. No, 100%. I mean, that is like almost the only way to like make it where it would actually like where it should exist. Like, that's kind of my thing with Star Wars stories and films and comics and everything. After I'm done with it, if I kind of like ask myself, like, did this need to exist? And when the answer is yes, it's like, it's great. And so far in all of the Star Wars films, I feel like the answer has been yes. I don't feel like it has not enriched or done something good for Star Wars itself. But when, you know, you get into like other mediums, like an episode of a show or something like that, sometimes you're like, this didn't need to exist. And the last thing I ever want is there to be a Star Wars film that I go and see and say, yeah, this was inconsequential and didn't really need to happen.
Actually, I have a question about, do you know, or do you have a feeling of what, like Lucasfilm or Disney sort of expect out of the movies? Because, so like for me, I could very easily be happy with, you know, like a low-key Solo 2 on the streaming platform. But like, do you think they really, like, they consider each, it's not worth putting out a movie if we don't think it's going to make $1 billion?
I don't think so. I don't think they could see it that way. In some ways, I don't even know if at this point they've even known what to expect at times. I mean, everything seems like it's a trial dry run, you know, almost, or something like that. Like I think, like my personal, this is just my theory, but I think that Solo came out when it did because Last Jedi was coming out in December. So if Solo comes out after, Last Jedi's safe. But I think the closer that they put Solo to Episode 9, the more of a detraction from 9 it can be in terms of like box office and stuff. And 9 is probably more of the surefire like hit. Like 9 has the potential to make the most money. So by giving 9 way more room than it needs, I think that they're ensuring 9 makes a ton of cash. And that's why I think Solo came out instead of making it December. I think that's why they stuck with May. I think that they were hoping they were going to do a Star Wars film really close to 8, and it was just going to like kill it, and they were just going to be, you know, on cloud 9. That was, I think, the gamble and the hope. And so that's like my theory on it. But I kind of I'm kind of glad. I'm not glad that Star Wars failed. I'm not glad that Solo failed financially. I think it's a very good movie, but I'm kind of glad that it showed that it
right.
they can't just go to sleep at the wheel on this. Like, it does, it is going to take like some care and attention, and you can't just keep doing the same rollout and this the same strategy. Because I mean, Han Solo almost had the same strategy as the saga films. It almost had the same rollout, but with shorter time and like less attention. And it just kind of, the marketing to me felt like they were asleep at the wheel, thinking that, like, you know, hey, Star Wars is a sure thing no matter what. And so I think hopefully this makes it where, you know, things are a little bit more creative going forward and not always the same.
Do we know when the Blu-ray and home release of Solo will be?
Last night I posted a story up of the covers of the 4K and the Blu-ray for the Solo A Star Wars Story. And when you go to Target and you go to do like the pre-order, it's actually Clayton Sendo yeah. who pointed it out to me from ABC. When you go there, I think it says September 7th, which is like a okay. Monday for some people or a Sunday for some people. So it's kind of a weird date, but it seems to be like the projected window according to Target. And I imagine that any day now we'll be getting the press release from Lucasfilm with like the firm hard details of the disc release. And I would imagine that 2 weeks before that or so, we'll get the digital release.
And obviously, like, because we haven't got a Star Wars film in December this time, and if that's a full release, that's a sort of good, like, few months build up for Christmas. Do you think that the release of the Solo Blu-ray will actually pick up and get a decent amount of people watching the film and making a little bit of money back for Lucasfilm?
I would think so. I mean, to me, like, Charlie, it took you a little while to get to the film, right?
Yeah,
like to me, like, not knocking you, dude, life's life. I'm just like, whoa, man, like, I would freak out. Like, if Star Wars was like in a theater and I hadn't seen it yet, I would flip out. So like, my perspective on this is completely yeah, my perspective is crazy, you know what I mean, on that front. But I have a hard time imagining anybody who would call themselves a Star Wars fan could just, you know, be at the supermarket, you know, buying some water and Doritos or something, and then they see it and they're like, oh, pass. Like how could you not pick it up? And I also think that it, like, this one may actually do better in terms of home video formats because of the fact that so many people didn't see it, you know? Yeah. And it costs so much to go to the movies too, and that's one of the other things. Like, if I go to like a normal screening and I take like my family, like, I'm in like almost $60 like every single time. So I could certainly see some families who just saw Last Jedi like skipping it and then going, yeah, we'll pick up the Blu-ray because that's like $20 and we could all see it a lot of times. But, you know, at the same time, like I said, I'm the crazy guy who can't even sit still knowing that a Star Wars movie is in the theater and I'm not there watching it right now. Which I'm probably going to go see Han Solo
You're
today.
You're buying a ticket now.
This conversation.
On the phone.
Yes.
Yeah.
You're already in the No, I truly agree with you. My dad's a big Star Wars fan, and like, I don't know if he'd be at the same length where he'd be like, oh, do you know what? I think he is like annoyed that he hasn't seen Solo yet.
Yeah.
Like, he waited like a few months to watch The Force Awakens purely because we just didn't have the time.
Yeah.
And I had to keep the Han Solo dying from him for like 3 months. Oh. And I remember he came back and he was like, thank you for not spoiling a thing. And it's the same with like Solo. I don't think he's going to have enough time to actually see the film. And I think part of that is because I think even though people say, yeah, but, you know, summer's a good time to watch films, there's big blockbusters. I managed to get him an Avengers ticket, but if it weren't for that, we wouldn't probably have seen the film. Because, like you said, films cost too much, and there's a better chance of us actually going to the cinema at Christmas time, because obviously people have time off, and it's more of an event. I think like, there's more time for people to go to the cinema.
Yeah.
So for this right now, it's like very difficult for him to get the chance to see it, but I know for certain he'll have pre-ordered the Blu-ray, and he'll watch it the first day he gets it. So, I'm interested to see how that response to the Blu-rays will like get for Lucasfilm. And if that's a positive thing with the home release, do you reckon there's a chance we'll ever get a sequel to Solo? Because there's a few threads that I was actually fascinated by. Han and Chewie, I mean, for me personally, I would see that film anyway. But of course, you know, the detractors of the fact they didn't make much money. But the sort of the thing I'm interested the most to see a follow-up on, even if it's in a book or a comic, is the Maul Kira angle. Like, that could be a whole film by itself, in my opinion.
Yeah, that was my, like, theory. I mean, my theory was that it... My personal fan theory was that Enfys Nest reports to Bail Organa, as we learn. You know, she's earning the money for him, it seems. And so if at some point she finds out that a former Sith Lord is the head of Crimson Dawn, she's going to clearly tell Bail. And when Bail hears that, who's he going to call? He's going to call Kenobi.
Ghostbusters.
Yeah, Ghostbusters. I almost said it, Charlie, and I was like, I know what I just said. Don't say Ghostbusters, Jason. Don't do it. But then, you know,
that'd be crazy though, wouldn't it?
But yeah, I mean, because if you want to look at like what would you know, bring Kenobi out of his babysitting job on Tatooine, you know, what would do it? And you know, it would be that Maul is out there. And that he's, you know, conquering worlds and stuff again, and he needs to put an end to it. And then, you know, obviously, when I presented that idea, everyone was like, well, Star Wars Rebels. And my take on that was that we don't know how Maul gets trapped on Malachor. So maybe at one point, Kenobi, you know, gets him trapped in that temple and thinks that's the end of him. But or maybe he knows that it's temporary and that it and maybe he knows that when he finds that holocron in there, it's going to eventually take him to a Luke because he knows what his goals are, which is to vanquish the Sith or become the next Sith or whatever, get revenge and all that stuff. And so with that in mind, maybe in the film, Kenobi would go back to a Tatooine knowing that he's also now he's guarding Luke, but now he's also waiting for Maul because he knows he's coming. And I still believe that because of that narrative device in Last Jedi of the Kurosawa-style Rashomon effects where you see one thing from multiple vantage points and with different interpretations, like between Luke going to kill his nephew and how his nephew sees it and how Luke sees it. I think with that narrative device having been introduced, I think you can retell that end moment in Star Wars Rebels without violating Star Wars Rebels. And also because, you know, Ezra Bridger walks away, like, and you could just take it like that was kind of what Ezra knows of it. And like they could expand on that duel, but at the end of the day, it would still have to come down to that standoff moment with those couple of strikes. But in Star Wars Rebels, they also didn't really show like the strikes. Like it was very, you know, kid friendly on that part. So I think that there was an opportunity to do that if they had wanted to. But that was my like fan theory on it. You know what I wanted.
I think as well, like, if Kenobi is in the shadows and he doesn't want to approach Maul himself because he doesn't want to risk the chance of, one, knowing he's alive. Because obviously in Rebels, I think Maul isn't entirely sure whether he's alive or not.
Yeah.
Which could be at any point in the timeline. But if he is, Kenobi is hell-bent on sort of, like, hiding away. The key sort of thing I liked about the Clone Wars as well is that obviously Maul's power base comes from the power he gains. So if the Kenobi film was about him taking down Crimson Dawn from the inside and sort of just dismantling his criminal empire, that could actually lead him to have nothing and push himself to go to Malachor. And then he finds himself trapped. And Kenobi thinks, like you said, that threat's dealt with. Like, I've taken away his toys.
Yeah.
So now he's alone. And that's a fascinating sort of idea. I just don't know whether they'd jump for it, but I'd certainly watch it.
Yeah, it's weird that they put Maul in Solo if they didn't have any plans of ever elaborating anytime soon.
Absolutely.
Because like my dad didn't know that Maul was alive. Like I took him to a see Solo and he was like, number one, he loved it. He said it was the best of the new ones. Like he thought it was like the greatest of the current films. But he was also like, wow, so Darth Maul's alive? Like how did that happen? And I'm like, I can't tell my dad to go watch. Hey, Dad, go watch 100 episodes of Clone Wars and then do like another 60 of Star Wars Rebels. He's not going to do it to like answer that question. He doesn't care enough. So on one hand, like they kind of presented this idea. And so now there are people who are like, well, yeah, I want to know. But you need to tell me in the cinema because that's where I buy my Star Wars. You know, that's where I experience it. So very strange choice. I love it, but it's definitely a strange choice if they are not going to elaborate.
Yeah, my favorite part of the behind-the-scenes stuff was, like, Ron Howard being like, yeah, we thought we have a few different people we put in, and then, like, John Kasdan was like, no, it was more. Straight off. Because I'm interested to see how he takes it. Like, I know we take things for granted in the Star Wars fandom, but I remember coming out with Solo and just sort of thinking to myself on the bus home, we've just seen Larry Kasdan write Darth Maul.
Yeah.
And it blew my mind. I was like, that's... If I went back in time and told my 9-year-old self that, he'd be like, yeah, right, you're making that up. It's pretty crazy. Like, I'd love the whole sort of, like, his take on Maul. Because I think what Rebels does really well as well is actually dive into that sort of his mindset and the idea that he's been as wronged as Obi-Wan has by the Sith. Like,
right.
He's a victim in himself, basically. And I think the more we dive into that, the more interesting that character will be.
I also liked I thought Kira's character in Solo, I think that while I do think that she was ambitious and, you know, she was sort of a space pirate just as much as the rest of them, I kind of think that in that end moment, I think that she was kind of protecting Han because Han doesn't really understand what kind of evil is behind this stuff. He sort of simplifies everything, but she knows. She knows who Maul is or what he is. And I kind of feel like her making that choice to go join Maul after she just, like, was in a village at the refinery on Savarine where all of the villagers had their tongues cut out because they didn't want to be exploited by them anymore. Her to go join them, that would make her the most awful person in the galaxy. And I think that what she's doing is saving Han, so there is sort of a little bit of redemption there for her choice. But it would be really great to see her be the like linchpin that allows Kenobi to take Maul down or to help Crimson Dawn fall. Because ultimately, I would think that her character, that would be her trajectory, is that she's going to eventually, you know, be the hero who stops it.
Yeah, I don't know about you guys, but a lot of people are saying, oh, they could be like sequels, obviously, where Kira hangs out with Han again. I don't know whether she's going to see him again. That was my opinion watching the film.
Same.
Yeah, like the whole Han character we get where he doesn't believe in all the, you know, the religion and stuff. Like, if he met Darth Maul, it's very unlikely that he'd be like,
I feel like we could see Han and Kira together again just because I don't feel like Han is emotionally at that jaded point where he doesn't care about anyone or anything that we see in A New Hope, and I feel like she's the perfect person to like twist that knife in his back and make him that way. But I don't see any chance that you could have that moment and have Maul show up as well. That wouldn't sit right.
Yeah, I mean the one thing that I guess the one out they have, if they ever wanted Han to know that Maul was in control. Number one, he doesn't really have to know what Maul is, like, as a Sith, so to speak. But he does say, yeah, I've seen a lot of strange things.
Oh, yeah.
You know, that's what he says. So with that in mind, you know, he could see Maul do something spectacular, mm-hmm. and that right there would justify it. But I do think that your general audience isn't going to remember that line, and every, like, knee-jerk person's going to go, well, he's not supposed to know, you know, like right off the bat. So it would make it a more difficult sell. But I don't know. I find what you said interesting, Claire, because like when I'm like thinking about it now, I never really thought about this. But now I'm not sure I even believe Han is ever that jaded guy that we thought he was.
Mm.
I agree.
Think he's like he's always been pretending like I'm an outlaw. Like when he says that line to Kira, and like in a way, yeah, I kind of think he's always been pretending because we've never had like a movie where he stayed as a jerk. Or where, you know what I mean? He always ends up, like, giving in and becoming, like, kind of a teddy bear by the end. So, yeah, it's interesting to see, to think about how they can go forward with Solo in a film based off of that idea. Because, you know, he did at the end, he did shoot Beckett, though.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? He did, like, he did still cap him because he knew he was next. He could have shot his hand. he could have shot, you know, he could have shot him in the leg and disarmed. He could have done anything. But he was like, nah, I got to kill this guy because this guy's going to kill me. So there is sort of that cutthroat element still there, though.
But I just wonder, like, with Enfys Nest, the second she opens her mouth and describes the kind of rebellion she's on, there's, like, not a second where Han goes, oh, maybe we should, you know, just keep it up and, like, hang them out to dry. And I feel like that's kind of different than what he does and in A New Hope, where they're like, all right, we got to make this. And he's like, no, I'm not helping you. Bye.
I think, to be fair, though, as well, at that point of time, like, he'd worked for the Empire. He'd been through, like, literally through the mud, seeing, like, how tough and how bad they can be and how horrible. And, to be like, she... her gang was like just a bunch of like 12 people as opposed to like the big rebel fleet we see on Yavin. So I can understand why he might be a bit like,
it'd been a long day, yeah, you know, just done the Kessel run. I'll go almost got way. Killed. He's like, I'm ready to.
Yeah.
But he did help them out at the end of the day. He did come up with that plan to help them out though, even if he's not like, I'm exactly. going to join, but it just seems kind of, I don't know.
Yeah.
I think that was the thing I liked about Han's character the most in that film, is that we see like bits, like it changes your view of the character both in episode 4 and 7 for me. Like, obviously he knows how to relate with Finn and Rey because he's an outsider and he used to work for the Empire, so you can understand how he gets some of them really quickly. And also, like Jason, like you just said, I don't think he's ever been that sort of, like, deep down he has that heart, like Kira said. I think that's his problem. I think as well, we have to remind ourselves that he has to deal with like Boba Fett and Jabba the Hutt afterwards. So he's very stressed out.
Yeah,
he's a rough go.
Yeah.
That's probably why
he's like in A New Hope now. When if you analyze the character, like he wants to be Beckett in A New Hope, and he goes to go, but then like either Chewie guilt trips him or he just like for whatever reason he turns that ship around and goes to the fight. You know.
Exactly, yeah. He can't help it. Like, he's seen how, like, with the Death Star, that's a pretty major step up. Like, the Empire are bad as it is, but the ability to obliterate planets. And, like, you see his reaction when they fly to Alderaan, and he's like, it's not there anymore, kid. It's gone.
Yeah.
Like, if you think about his brain process, it's like, Jesus Christ, that just blew up a whole planet full of people. Even for Han, I guess that's kind of like, deep down, he's probably thinking, yeah, this is no good. We have to try and stop this. Well, I think we've got some listener questions. Claire, do you have those up?
So our first listener question is from Josh Chapman. And he says, hi, longtime listener, first-time tweeter. Why do sites / YouTube channels with terrible track records of getting Star Wars scoops actually correct and are pretty much just making it up continue to keep getting so much traffic? Does no one fact check? Who wants to take funny. That one?
I could tell you like firsthand, just having like, you know, ran a site for a while and stuff like that, and like just observed all of this stuff. Is that, yeah, it is kind of that. It isn't really like about for, I try to not be this way, and I don't think I am this way, but for some like outlets and some sites, it's not about authenticity or being accurate or having like the best news on your site. It's about feeding your audience that day. It doesn't matter to them if it's true or not. It just has to be like, did I entertain, you know, my readers today? And there are Star Wars sites like that. I mean, like that really terrible YouTube channel, Mike Zero. Like, I don't know. I can't believe that guy believes half of the stuff he puts on his videos. You know what I mean? I mean, he'd have to be like delusional, but he does it, and he does it because he needs content. And like, there's like kind of like an anxiety that comes with not having content, at least for me. Like, when like nothing is going on, it's like, well, what do I do? You know, do I write an editorial? Do I do a think piece on a Star Wars? Like, do I, you know, and so you kind of have a choice there. You go and do that, or you go and you start talking to people who might know things and try to get a story, you know? And, but a lot of those sites, they just like take information and regurgitate it. It's not about actually like getting original content. It's just about making, repurposing articles so that way everybody's collectively doing the work together, and it's not good. It's not, I personally
yeah,
hate
I think
it.
Also,
but it is the way that it is.
Probably why, you know, a lot of these places keep getting traffic is sort of just like with political think pieces, like people want their sort of ideologies reflected, and you know, if you feel a certain like particular way about something, kind of doesn't, the facts are like they take the back seat compared to, oh well, this guy is making me feel like I'm right. I feel like there's definitely some more, you know, sinister part of or toxic rather, parts of covering this stuff, and I feel like that strokes a lot of ideologies that people would rather hang on to than really care about what the factual stuff is.
Yeah, big time, big time. There's also, like, I would say too, an element of like entertainment journalism that are huge Star Wars fans, so they write about everything because a part of them wish that they were running a Star Wars website.
Mm-hmm.
And they're not. They're running like a film site. And then there's also the flip side of that, where it's people who, you know, wanted to you know, write about Alejandro Jodorowsky films, and they're writing about, you know, guys in spandex and with laser swords and stuff. And so they are positive about that when the money's great, when like there's tons of hits coming in. You know, you write Star Wars in a headline, and oh, cool, I made, you know, all the money I need that
right.
day. You know, hit the quota, so to speak. But then over time, when that starts to like lessen, the contempt for it grows. And I knew this was coming back. I saw this happen during the prequel era. And it's sort of, we're in that phase now again, where just because you put Star, you know, people are getting a little bit used to Star Wars. So just because you put Star Wars in the headline doesn't mean it's going to get like a bajillion views. And so you're starting to see some of that cynicism with those people that I would say aren't really Star Wars fans, just movie consumers, and who do reporting and run websites, are starting to kind of take those negative angles more and more. And I think it's completely scary, though, this time out, because there is this alt-right YouTube faction that, like, you know, I've been dealing with, and they are going to really pick up on that stuff, and they're really gonna push it. And the ramifications of those stories, like back during the prequel era, it was just like, yeah, I don't like the prequels either. Like, that was it. But now it's being used to like attack diversity. It's being used to attack women and, you know, whatever sort of thing that doesn't really fit like the straight white male like archetype. That is what they're going to use as ammo. So it's a really weird, in some ways scarier, more difficult time. And the ramifications of those kinds of stories that are completely just like irresponsible, that they mean something different than they used to, at least to the, I think, to the active Star Wars fandom.
Yeah, and as a journalism graduate, it was kind of difficult because they teach you certain things. Like, you have to remember, like, some journalists, they might write a decent article, and the article will not get read because the headline will be quite clickbaity, but they didn't come up with that. It was the editor, because, you know, SEO is the most important thing. It's not the actual article itself. It's what gets the actual clicks.
Right.
And you see a lot of YouTube videos as well. It's the main image or the title of the video will be completely different to what the actual video is about.
It drives me crazy, man. Like, I get called a shill and a clickbaiter all the time. And like, if you go to any of my spoiler articles, like, just go to the and try to figure out what it was about off of the headline, and like, and I don't make them that clickbaity, you know, and but it's like, yeah. I could be so much worse, and it's so hard to not fall into that trap.
That's the sort of the tightrope you have to sort of go behind is you want to get people in. You want to get people like reading or watching or listening to whatever you've got. But I feel like as a journalist, you have a certain obligation to your audience to tell the truth. So it's kind of hard. You have to debate whether you want to help, how far to push the envelope. And I think obviously for editors, they have to get those clicks. They have to get those views. So that's where you get difference. With YouTubers though, there is no editorial, like they don't get taught these sort of things. Which, you know, it's fair enough to an extent, but there is no code of conduct for YouTubers. You get your mic zeros, you just, you know, put up anything, and people just lap it up, like, because they know what people want. People want Boba Fett film.
Yeah,
played by John
Boba Fett. He's cool, so slap him on anything. Yeah, exactly. Like, he's white now. How come? Because he picks up the armor, because they killed off the Maori character. Why? Because it's the prequels, which apparently you have to either love or hate. And if you're both, you're wrong.
Thank you for saying that, Charlie. I've been thinking that for a long time, so thank you.
No worries. But yeah, it's just so frustrating. Like, and we have to remember as well, like, we're debating the whole idea of people saying, oh, there's going to be a Han Solo film where he's on the moon and he's, like, coming to Earth. Like, that's bullshit. But at the same time, we're in a world where fake news is rampant. It got Donald Trump elected. So there has to be a sort of a push on education in terms of, I feel like people need to understand what's right and wrong. And like we said earlier, Jason, it doesn't help when people like Collider, like, try and shit on other journalists like Clayton, because Clayton has done amazing work. Like, his whole series on the Tarkin CGI videos, I don't know if you've seen that, it's fascinating. And so, and I'm not shitting on Collider, because they did a good job, I think, reporting it in the first place. But when you've got them saying, oh, well, ABC, obviously they're biased because they work for Luke, like, for Disney, like, you can see where they're going from, but now you're making people doubt a pretty solid news network. And it's okay to be it's okay to be wary of your sources, but ABC News isn't Fox News. Like, they wouldn't just outgoingly do it. Like, there's certainly a PR element. There's obviously a PR element, but you have to weigh it up. It's not completely PR. Otherwise, it'd be like, Ewan McGregor is definitely on board. Like, and, like, it's obviously in the middle. And I think that the more we push the idea onto people and fans that they have to sort of discern their sources, the better. But, like, it gets to the ridiculous extents, doesn't it? Like, my favourite one is Mike Zero has made 4 screenshots of Luke Skywalker, and it's Jeff Bridges.
Yeah, it's really weird. Really weird.
I'm at the point where I think he's mocking people now. Like, he must be taking the piss, because there's no way. That can't be real. He can't really think that's Mark Hamill.
Sophisticated trolling, double agent trolling.
You know, he was a big participant in the Dragon Ball Z community.
Wow, really?
Yeah, but he was so insufferable and awful, and said, like, really horrible things about people's wives and stuff like that. Jesus. That they actually booted. They actually, like, completely expelled him, and like pushed him out, and then he left and came to us. Thankfully, thanks, guys. You know, yeah, but. It's kind of, I don't know. I don't know what to make of him, because so much of how he, you know, he stole my videos one time off of my YouTube, and I was, like, really nice at first. And I was like, look, dude, like, you took the videos. It's totally fine, I guess, but you should have, like, at least, like, cited me. That would have been a way to get me back. And then his response was, like, in his next video, like, Jason, he put another one up, a second video, and then he said, like, Jason Ward didn't take these, he just released them, even though, like, the videos were taken for my outlet, like, they were, like, literally a product of my outlet, you know? And so with that, he wouldn't see reason, so I had to copyright strike him. So I got him 2 copyright strikes, and then after that, he started citing me. But it's kind of like I'm not a trained journalist either. I mean, I come out of anthropology and ethnography, which sort of has some journalistic elements to it that I've been able to use to do what I do. But there is sort of like a learning on the job kind of aspect to this. Like, for instance, when I knew about all of the drama with Rogue One, and I did a report where I said that, you know, 40% of the film is being refilmed. And I also, in my article, said, this is a great thing because they feel that they got it wrong. They're spending the cash to make it right. this is not a bad thing.
Yeah.
And then, but I got smeared by like Pablo Hidalgo and, and those cats and stuff like that. Like, this is all bullshit. This is all fake. And it's only been confirmed time. And I mean, Tony Gilroy pretty much just came out and said it was accurate. Like, really, really recently, you know, the second director. And so there is like, I learned in that way, don't ever say a specific number.
Exactly.
You know,
yeah.
Like, that was my lesson. Had I just said like almost half or a little less than half, I would have been, they couldn't have said that to me. But because I was specific based off of what the sources were saying, they were able to do that. So like I said, there's a complete like on the job learning aspect. Like, if you think you're not a journalist, that's fine. You could say you're not, but you are. You just might be a bad one. That's kind of what it comes down to. If you're running a site, if you're doing media, and if you're reporting what is supposed to be news. And so that's been my take on it, is like, yeah, wasn't a journalist. I did an interview one time, and in it I said, like, I don't consider myself a journalist, because there were like people that week like dying, like journalists dying in war zones and stuff.
Yeah.
And I'm like, so like, compared to what they do, I don't consider myself a journalist. So that article comes out, right? Then this let's just call them a Star Wars licensee gets really mad at me for a scoop that I had, and they send their lawyers after me. And I would send them back, here's the California Shield law, bitch. Sorry. Am I allowed to cuss on the show?
Yeah,
you
go
are.
For it.
You're absurd.
Okay,
let it fly,
yeah,
man.
Yeah, yeah. So here's the California Shield law. There it is. Enjoy it, you know. I'm not giving up my sources. And, like, you know, they would just, like, continually, like, they would just harass about it, you know, trying to scare me and stuff like that. And it's the way that it is. At that point, they came and they found the article, the interview I had done, where I said I wasn't a journalist, and said, you're not a journalist. You're not protected under the California Shield law. And I was like, yeah, but we both know that I am, because if I wasn't, you wouldn't be pissed off right now.
Yeah.
And that was sort of like almost the end of our correspondence. But the point is, you could say you're not a journalist, you could pretend that you're not, but if you were reporting the news and you're, like I said, you're doing journalism, you are a journalist, you just might be a bad one. And so that's kind of like the thing is, if you want to run a Star Wars website or any kind of entertainment website, like, you kind of have to like try to figure that stuff out. And it's all on the job, and everybody's in different places. Like, sometimes there's like a 15 or 16 year old kid who just does something that's completely irresponsible. And then I got to be like, hey man, like, you know, you shouldn't do that probably. And they're like, oh, you know, and then you're like, okay, cool. Like, I made the world a better place here. Like, this kid now knows. And then you see them go on and they are more responsible after that. But then you'll see the opposite side, which is the Mike Zero side, especially in the Dragon Ball Z stuff, from what I've heard. Is that, like, you know, he like lifts something and somebody's like, hey, we can't publish that. You shouldn't do that. That's plagiarism. Don't be that way. And then he's like, well, IGN does it.
Ugh.
You know, like that. And it's just like, so at that point, there is a clear choice. I'm going to be bad at this, but I'm going to get attention. And so, like, you know, my goal is to be an attention whore and be good at it. If I could have my cake and eat it, too.
That should be your etifar, like, on the grave. Like, he was an attention whore. And he did it well.
Exactly.
To sum up Josh's question, I think the key reasons why they keep getting traffic is obviously it's bias. Like, if you're looking for a certain thing and people are just telling you what you want, you're probably going to listen to it. It's depressing that way, but that's what people want. People want a Boba Fett film and they want Jon Hamm to be in it. Someone's probably out there telling them that, and they're like, yay, even though it's false. And then they get angry when it doesn't happen because the internet.
Well, and confirmation bias is a hell of a drug. People are addicted to it.
I mean, like I said, obviously the presidency, I mean, Brexit is another one. And mm-hmm. there's people out there actively pushing for those things as well. Like, it's not just, people aren't just stupid. People are being manipulated as well by others. I think we all need to be a bit more open-minded with everything. And also, like, so much traffic as well is because people need clicks. People might edit their video to have a weird title, but don't always attack the writers because they might not come up with the headline. I hope that sort of sums it up. Yeah, Claire, was there any more questions?
Yes, we have a few more. So our next question is from Andy Campbell. What's up, man? And he asks, should Star Wars now officially just be December releases from now on? May clearly didn't work at all. So who wants to start on that one?
I have a very specific thing. I've harped on this before. Solo came out. Opening night was my birthday. It was very special. I will always have a warm spot for Star Wars in May. And that's my opinion.
Okay.
I'm like a bit more, I agree. Like if we're not going to try harder at all, like if Disney's just going to be like, it is what it is, this is life. Then I go, but like a part of me goes like, man, you're like Disney, one of the most powerful entertainment corporations in the world. You know, you're hiring PR people from the best Ivy League schools in the world. Like, you're trying to tell me that you guys can't figure out how to sell Star Wars twice in a year? Like, come on, man. Like, that sounds ridiculous to me. I don't think that they know how to sell Star Wars twice in a year right now. But the idea or the concept that it's beyond them, to me, that's where I go, like, I think they can do it. I think they could do it. I think they can do it. I think they should do it. But who knows what the immediate future will look like as they try and, you know, not spook investors and not hurt the other films in production and stuff like that. There's so many, like, pieces of the
puzzle. When did Marvel really start getting into, like, the multiple a year?
That would have been, I don't know, it would have been like pretty early on, I think. I think Captain America.
Forget that the second one was Incredible Hulk, and they survived.
Our solo box office field. Came out the same year, right?
Yeah, because I feel like whether it's fair or not, Star Wars is always sort of compared to Marvel, right? In that, you know, well, Marvel does it kind of way.
Yeah, you're right, but I think like the fundamental difference is that they figured out how to like not make it like Marvel Iron Man, Marvel Captain America, Marvel, you know, Black Widow. Like, they're able to go and they're able to like be like, no, like, that's Iron Man, he has a movie. And so with Star Wars, they have to figure out to go, yeah, that's Boba Fett, he has a movie. Not like, this is Star Wars, because people think of Star Wars in this linear kind of way, this like story, even if they're told out of order, they still see it as like one big story. And somehow they have to convince the general public, the movie going audiences, that like these characters are bigger than the Skywalker saga. And maybe Rian Johnson's trilogy and the Game of Thrones trilogy stuff, maybe when that stuff happens, it'll like, people will start to see it differently. Maybe their eyes will start to go like, Star Wars is bigger than just that family, just those Skywalker kids. But until they like figure that out, like that is the problem, you know, I think.
And it's such a big universe that, but the problem is that so little of it has been explored to the general movie going audience. Like, all of us who read books and the comics and like absorb all of the information that's out there. Yeah, there's a lot going on and it's a really huge universe, but it just seems like right now it's not going to succeed because it needs to feel like Star Wars, but at the same time be new. And I think that you're right. I think that those new series, the Benioff and Weiss series and the Rian Johnson trilogy.
Thank you. I could not remember their names for the life of me.
Do you want a trick to remember their names?
Yeah.
So David Benioff is the first one, and his initials are DB, and the other one is DB Weiss, and I like beer, and Weiss is kind of beer. That's the stupid way that I remember their name.
And
done.
Yeah, not my favorite beer, but it's good on a summer day, man.
All right.
There you go.
So, sorry, go on. I didn't mean to
interrupt. It's all good. that was essentially all I was thinking on it, is that I think that they absolutely can sell two movies a year. I like it being put in December for now because, I mean, I think that financially that's the best move for Disney at this point because, I mean, they have all the, like, two Marvel movies coming out this summer, and they have so much that's going on in that time. But I think financially right now, December is the ideal release date for them, just so that they don't compete with their own content. But you're absolutely right. I think that they can sell two movies a year, but I think the universe needs to be expanded a little bit more than, because everything that's been released has been stuck in the years between episodes 3 and 4 or sequel time, which has only taken like, what, a week?
Yeah.
Which, so I think, yeah, we need some expansion before we can.
Yeah. New stakes, new consequences, like stuff like that.
I think as well as like with Star Wars, we've had like 40 years of storytelling, but 90% of that has been the Star Wars saga, which, like you said, is just this one family, basically. Whereas Marvel, on the other hand, is like over 50 years, I mean, like 70 years, basically, of comic books, and the way that comic books work differently and how they adapt better on screen is because each of those characters' books are different. They have a different tone. But they also blend together because, like, a Captain America book has a very completely different tone to an Iron Man book and different characters. But you got the Avengers book and they all come together and it works. And funnily enough, it works on screen as well. And I think that's, like you said, that's the difference between the Star Wars films. We have to still try and find that distinct key. And I think actually we've got proof that it works, because I think The Clone Wars is a really good example of sort of divulging away from the Skywalker saga at some points and telling really great stories, like about the clones and stuff. And I think that's kind of why I like the standalones more at the minute, because they feel like Clone Wars arcs.
Yeah.
If that makes sense. Like a free episode arc of the Clone Wars could be a decent standalone. And I think the more they sort of delve onto that and sort of push away from the main things that we delve in. Like George Lucas the other day was talking about how he had like microorganisms and stuff. If George Lucas did like a standalone film about the Force Priestesses, I'd be into that. Like,
yeah,
because it's so different and sort of new. And like the Mortis arc, if that was a film, like, it'd be weird, but it'd be different and it's fresh. And I feel like that's the sort of thing we need to push for. As for the December releases, if I had to put my Disney money hat on, which has two big Mickey Mouse ears because I'm a shill, I think December is the perfect point, because, I mean, look at 2019 next year. December, you've got all the book releases that have come out that year, and potentially some comic books that might be coming out later that fall. That's a good time for Christmas. You've got the film, Christmas time, go see it. Like, that's more money for Disney. Respawn's game, Jedi Fallen Order, comes out next year at Christmas time. All this Star Wars stuff, people, if you're a Star Wars fan, what's the perfect gift for a Star Wars fan? Like, you got like a whole ton of stuff. And there's more likely a chance for people to have a time off at Christmas to actually see the film. So there's all these incentives to actually go and have Star Wars stuff thrown at you. I mean, look at Rebels when that came out with The Force Awakens. That basically finished just before a Star Wars film came out and picked up afterwards. So you've got this sort of constant sort of role of Star Wars stuff, which I think is just really cool to have. But with the May release, it was just thrown out there. I mean, you know, I love the tradition of it all, but
it was very different, right? We've got
a new tradition now.
The prequel release was just totally different contextually to how movies are coming out in this era, right?
Yeah, and that was like every few years as well. So you had like it was a different whole ball game. Claire, we've got one last question.
We have two more, which we can get through these.
Okay, go.
Real quick. So, next one's from Matt Turbo, or Turbo, what's up, man? Who would you like to see as directors of future Star Wars films? My picks would be Duncan Jones, he's already been interviewed on the Star Wars show, and Reed Morano, and she's the director of The Handmaid's Tale initial episodes, and also a brilliant cinematographer. So, who would you guys like to direct Star Wars?
Ooh, that second choice would be really interesting in terms of, like, what Empire means and stuff like that, like when you look at Handmaid's Tale. What's funny is me and Steele went to a screening of Duncan Jones's last film, and we talked to him there, and I was like, hey man, when are you gonna do a Star Wars movie or something? Or it might have been Steele, I can't remember, one of us mentioned it, and he said, like, yeah, I'm not really like a big Star Wars person, you know? I don't think I'd be a good choice for it, honestly. and I was like, aw. but at the same time, like, you know, I didn't want to sit there and like convince him, you know, otherwise after he said that. But I was kind of like, you know, I don't think like Irvin Kershner would necessarily be a Star Wars fan either. Like, you know, any more than like Alec Guinness is a Star Wars fan, but was a great actor in the movie. Like, I kind of don't know if we need fans directing the films as much as we're
going
need,
back
like,
to that
really, you know,
or sorry, directors. Going back to that Tony Gilroy thing you brought up. I remember him saying like him being so detached from Star Wars helped him really like just go crazy on Rogue One and be like, well, this is garbage. This is, like, and fix it. Right. So yeah, I think it can be an advantage at some points.
Right. Definitely. I mean, that was like the thing with Gary Whitta when he was hired onto Rogue One. You know, he said some awful things about the prequels and the Clone Wars and George Lucas on the internet, and then that leaked out and everybody was crying that he was hired to write that film at one point. And, you know, I was like, I understood the sentiment. Like, you don't want somebody who doesn't like Star Wars writing it necessarily, but at the same time, like, someone who is massively critical of it may have a valid perspective on how to make something really fresh and good with it, too.
Yeah.
That was kind of my take.
I was surprised that Duncan Jones said that, because I'm pretty sure I've seen him before. Like, I think some of his first films on Super 8 were with Star Wars figures. So that's interesting. I actually found out I'm related to him.
Who aren't you related to? My God.
Well, he's David Bowie's son.
Yeah, I'm like Duncan Jones is cool, but if you're related to like David Bowie, like sell that one, because that's the raddest one.
Oh, I love
him
so much.
Like
the
raddest angle. We did the whole sort of conversation where Claire basically started crying because we both love David Bowie. Like we could go so into a whole thing into it, but
yeah.
But yeah, well,
Freddie Mercury is my dad, so it's cool.
Oh, is it? It's amazing. How does that even?
How hasn't this come up?
Yeah, right?
Also, how had that come up? No, whatever.
It was an experimental phase in 79.
Hey Jude is about me.
No, it's good.
That makes so much sense. Directors I would like to see do Star Wars films. Have you heard of Rachel Talalay? She did a Tank Girl, and she's directed loads of like shows such as Sherlock, Doctor Who. She's done like really amazing Doctor Who episodes. Like the actual direction of them are like beautiful. I'd love to see her take on a Star Wars film. Obviously, like just different types of directors that wouldn't have the chance otherwise, and don't wear plaid and have glasses and are white.
I feel like
that'd be cool.
This is probably a common choice, but I always think of Guillermo del Toro and just how much fun that Creature Shop would have with him.
Oh man.
Writing his film, but say goodbye. Find out what happened in the swamp.
Be raunchy.
That'd be interesting.
As far as my directing choice would go, obviously I want more women in the creative process. But
typical Claire.
I know. I'm sorry. It's not like I'm one of them or anything. But my choice would be Kathryn Bigelow, because I mean, like Hurt Locker, Zero Dark Thirty. If we got like another kind of like on like boots on the ground kind of Star Wars war kind of deal, and like the inner workings of taking down the Empire, heck yeah. Or maybe from the perspective of the Empire, I think she could do some justice to Star Wars.
Do you know what, even though I love Rogue One, but that mini sequence of Han in the Empire felt more like a war film.
I love that scene.
Than the whole of Rogue One.
Oh, for sure, I could see that.
Have you guys noticed the leg on the ground? Like there's just a leg, like in the foxhole. Like, yeah, someone,
I didn't
someone
notice
got their leg
that.
Blown off, and it's just there.
Please tell me it had like awkward red paint on the end of it, like in the cantina when they cut off fond of Baba's arm, his little furry hand.
I love that bit. But that's the only time we've seen blood in Star Wars, right?
Yeah, I think so.
I want to know the details on that. There must be a good novel that delves into the reason why the cauterization didn't work. Then maybe Obi-Wan was being like a dick, like he turned it off the lightsaber.
Somebody has rationalized it at some point. I am sure of it. We are Star Wars fans, after all. We'll apologize for every little detail.
We've got one last question, right?
Yes. So the last question is from Ian Coe, and he says, "I might be too late. Nah, man, you're good. But any info on the Mos Eisley film that was talked about in the MSW report would be rad. And would you lot think that idea would work better as a long form or a short series?"
Yeah, so as far as the information, like what I put out was the extent I'm allowed to talk about it. So I can't give anything else out about that. In terms of it being a long form or a series kind of idea, I could see both working. Like I was saying at the top of the show, it's like, look at Goodfellas, you know, but then look at Deadwood. Like, it's such a cool location that you could really tell any story there, and you could really, and it has ties to the whole galaxy, that, you know what I mean? And just like the way that things move to ports in a real world, like even like what The Wire did with the port system, you know, in terms of like human trafficking and stuff like that, and goods that go through the ports. There's just so much that can be told in that kind of setting that I can see how it was a huge opportunity, and I could see why they were going to make a film about it. And I hope they still do.
What about you guys?
As somebody whose guilty pleasure is the series Skins, specifically the UK version, I could totally see, I think that it would be really neat to tell a Mos Eisley story from different people that maybe work together or are closely related, like hang up at the cantina together or go on similar jobs for, you know, the Hutt cartel, but focus on a different one every episode. And I think that would make a very interesting kind of series or idea for a series. I think that you might have to switch up locations and switch up casts after a few seasons, just like Skins does. But I think that it really could work well in a series format. I think it would work better than a film alone would, because there's so much to explore there, and there's so many things I would want to get a different viewpoint on, based on where you live on Tatooine and what role you fill. But I'm also saying this having absolutely zero information about what a Mos Eisley film would be like, other than, hey, it's on Mos Eisley. But yeah, I think that it could work really well in a series format. That could be pretty interesting.
And they should hire all of the young people from Skins Star Wars films. Because
yes,
that first of all, like that cast
so
was
talented.
Like really good for being so young. Like I'm sure it's been a few years. Yeah, how long has it been? Like 8 years or something?
Must have been. I think 10 years, nearly.
Oh my god!
So
must have started. So, I think, 2007. I think maybe.
Oh, I'm gonna die soon. Life is just going.
Christ!
it's over.
Oh my god!
I don't think they got worse at acting, but there were just so many good people in there. I think what Hannah Murray ended up in Game of Thrones, and in that one you wouldn't even really know that she's extraordinarily beautiful and a great actor. She's not bad in the show, but just like the role was so small,
right?
You know, and like, so like I wouldn't mind seeing some of those actors, you know, show up in Star Wars someday.
And I like Nicholas Holt was really great. Joe mm-hmm. Dempsey also showed up in Game of Thrones, and man, I feel like, and what, oh my god, I'm forgetting Dev Patel.
Like, yeah, he broke out. Yeah,
yeah, it's not, yeah, like he was in Slumdog or anything, you know.
Yeah, no, he was almost I think he was almost Finn for a while.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, he was. I think it might have been for Finn. I need to remember now. But yeah, he was up for a Force Awakens role.
Can he please come back and audition again? Dev, I want you in my Star Wars.
There's actually a game that me and my family play, which is anytime a new British drama comes out, or comedy, or anything like that, any British thing, basically, the game is, were they in Doctor Who? and usually, it's always yes. like Felicity Jones does a great Cockney accent in that episode. If you watch Doctor Who, there'll be a lot of people that will eventually end up in these big films. Like, I watched the old episode, I think it was like from 3 years ago the other day, just a small character, and it was Letitia Wright from Black Panther. So it shows you how like they can jump up, because there's a lot of good talent over here, basically.
Right.
And like you said, like Skins is a good example. As for the Mos Eisley question, I think that like a good Netflix style series, obviously, probably for the Disney app, whatever that's called. Has it got a name yet?
I don't think it does.
Not that I know of.
We'll just call it Mickey Flix. that was terrible. I think that's you can have a good sort of anthology show itself, a bit like Black Mirror, where it's told in the same location, but each episode is a different story. Like, we don't go back to those characters. That'd be a more interesting sort of thing in my perspective. Like, this episode's about Wooha the bartender. Like, why does he hate droids? Find out.
His ex-wife was a droid and she left him for Lando. Her name was L3.
That's compelling.
Oh,
I'd
my
read
God.
That.
He took my puffer pigs. That'd be great. Like, heartbreaking.
Hello, headcanon.
There you go. Well, yeah, like, you know. Then you have those Dr. Everson cameos would make sense, as opposed to Rogue One. Or, like, find out we just left Jeddah.
Really looking forward to going back.
Okay, we were left. that and Alderaan. I've always wanted to go there. That'd be, like, heartbreaking. But, yeah, like, those sort of small stories are the things that I think would be really cool for that platform, as opposed to doing, like, I don't know, like, as opposed to doing sort of big-scale things for the small shows. I think the stories have to fit the platform. Like, there's no point telling a giant story for a comic book when it depends on the sort of, you know, the story itself, I think. I think a good anthology series would be good for Mos Eisley.
Yeah, definitely.
I'll go really quick.
Ideas on the Mos Eisley?
So I have like really weird tastes, I suppose. I got really, really excited when the Detours thing came out, and like the notion of Dex's Diner as this sort of like nexus for all these like just random character interactions, and Dex just sort of like schmoozing with them in the back, like that made me laugh so much. So any sort of, like if they did some sort of comedy line surrounding a cantina or a diner, and you just get all these wackos going through it, that would have really entertained me. I don't know what the heck the Mos Eisley thing was really about, but that would have got my money. I would have enjoyed that.
I think that's the first compliment Detours has ever got. So congratulations. I heard there's rumors that might be coming out, which is a whole different, you know, ball pit.
My take on that one was that they just renewed the copyright.
Yeah,
as they do every, because they did it in 2014 as well or something. Like it's something that has to happen every couple of years.
They're like, yeah, well, maybe one day. Like they just keep it locked away in the basement.
Yeah, I heard it had like a lot of contemporary jokes in it and stuff, and so like contemporary to 2012. I heard that they were already dated by the time that they were like in production, even some of them. So
right,
it doesn't sound like it's gonna be great.
Oh, that Mitt Romney is a terrible person, isn't he?
Yeah.
Oh yeah, the robot chicken. Like, I don't know if you guys saw the Rogue One sketch they did, but that was
brilliant. I remember that one.
I love that one. yeah, I like, stick to Robot Chicken. Detours was a different pulpit. Although I do agree, we need more Dex stories, because people would like to shit on Attack of the Clones, but Dex the Jester is A+ in my books.
Dude, just sit down with a cup of Jawa juice and listen to what's going on at Dex's Diner. Sure, why not? What do you know? Yeah,
the fact that it's canon that it closed down, that breaks my heart, man.
All good things must end.
Yeah,
that is sad. He deserves better.
A moment's silence, please.
Hopefully he got to go out and have more space adventures after it closed down.
Oh yeah, totally, yeah. He went on a big bender.
Now, I would watch that. He's like four beers in each, one in each hand. He's like, just raging across the galaxy, crashing into stuff and just,
Man, he doesn't strike me as a lightweight, just looking at the size of him.
No, when he drinks, though, he's drunk for days.
He's drinking Port in a Storm the whole time. Oh, man.
Yeah.
Depends on how big his pocketbook is.
Oh, my God.
Well, I think that's all we've got time for this week. We've covered a lot of ground, which is quite good. If you had any standalone questions or doubts, hopefully we answered those for you. Jason, is there anything you would like to plug?
Yeah, my website is makingstarwars.net. My podcast is Now This Is Podcasting. There's Making Star Wars on YouTube, where I'm starting to make videos every now and then, and I just made one recently. And then if you like the rock and roll music, I put out a single this week, and that's on Amazon and iTunes and Bandcamp and all that. And you could get links to that from my Twitter, which is @MakingStarWars.
I have to say, your YouTube show was just amazing. It's like, I don't know if you get Charlie Brooker over there.
No.
If you ever look at his news, Weekly Wipe, it's kind of like that, but for YouTube. And I appreciate that you've done that, because it's that's the biggest compliment I could give, I think.
Thank you.
It's really good.
We don't get it, but I bet it's great.
It sounds prestigious. Thank you.
Charlie Brooker's the guy who made and writes Black Mirror.
Oh,
nice. Yeah. Okay.
We get that reference.
Yeah.
I'll have to send you a link, because he does a show called Weekly Write, which is he watches the news, basically, and takes the shit out of it all, basically. It's great.
Yeah, send that to me. I could use some more inspiration.
Yeah. He did the best one was, I think the last one he did was the Yearly Wipe, which was when Trump got elected. And it's
oh, no.
His reaction to it is just amazing.
Nice.
So, yeah, I'll send that to you. Claire,
what's up?
Do you want to plug your stuff?
Yeah, you can follow me on Twitter and Instagram @cstribs, and if you become a patron of the Imperial Senate Podcast Patreon page, you can listen to my show Data Bank Discussions, where we talk about the background character in Star Wars that fills us with warm fuzzies inside. So that's good fun. Should be another episode coming up in the next few weeks.
And there's
so,
already
yay.
Two there, right?
Nice.
Yeah. Yes, both Charlie and Nikki's episodes are up, which are a good time.
Yeah, if you want to hear Claire go deep into the history and backgrounds of both the Polis Master Droids and Zabulba, then you gotta just, head to our Patreon. Because it's a fun time. It's a really cool little show to sort of talk about all that stuff.
Yes.
But Nikki...
Okay, everyone, if you want to talk to me... On Twitter, you can find me @Naquicious, which is NAQUICIOUS. And if you want to talk on Facebook, I'm in the Star Wars Podcast Alliance. It's a interesting place, to say the least. So if you want to find me in there, I am available to you.
You can find me on Twitter @CMWASHBY and Instagram @CharlieMWASHBY. Because that's my name. We have the Imperial Senate Podcast on Twitter, which is @ImpSenatePod. You can find us on Instagram too. We're on SoundCloud. I guess you listen to us on SoundCloud or iTunes anyway. But our Patreon is obviously patreon.com/ the Imperial Senate Podcast. I think that's everywhere you can find us except Facebook, which I just remembered now. just type the Imperial Senate podcast and we're there. But yeah, thanks for coming on, Jason.
Thank you for having me. I had a great time.
Cool. Well, we'll see you guys next time. See ya.
Bye.
Bye.
Dissolve the council permanently. The last remnants of the old republic.